Welcome to a Baseball America podcast. I'm Hudson Belinsky. Joining me, Josh Norris. We're not in the old podcast nook. We're in the conference room. Today we're going to talk about the trip we just came back from. We were in Tampa. Josh checking out some pro games down there, and I was at the East Coast Pro, one of the premier scouting events for the amateur summer showcase circuit.
And we'd be remiss if we did not say we were joined by the greatest intern named Brent, Brent Travalis. The Brenturn, the Cub, who has now returned to his homeland of Illinois.
It was a good week for us. It was a good week to have Brent down there. It was a lot of work we put in, and figured we'd just talk a little bit about it today and share it with you guys. So, Josh, I guess the format we'll do is just bounce back and forth between some of the high-ceiling players we saw. I know there's a few arms you liked down there, and got eyes on a promising young fella in the Red Sox system, if you want to tell our listeners a little bit about him.
Yes, I will tell tale of young Anderson Espinosa, whom I journeyed all the way to Sarasota from Tampa to see. And I got to see the rare GCL game played in an FSL stadium, because it had been raining and raining, and to my knowledge, it is still raining on the west coast of Florida. So they moved it from the little field to the big field, which was very nice. So it was me and about 10 of my friends watching Anderson Espinosa pitch against the GCL Orioles, and he was fantastic. He's a 17-year-old who's listed as 6'170". He's Venezuelan, and he's got some really, really good stuff. His fastball that day was up to 98 miles an hour.
Which would still be good for 17.
Yeah, 98 is just a plus. And it ran quite a bit to his arm side. Sometimes it didn't look like he could control it, but when he did, it was pretty nasty and unhittable. He got the first two outs of the game on two pitches, which I actually kind of didn't want to see, because I was hoping he wouldn't continue that pace and give me 12 pitches for four innings. That would have been a little useless. He also showed off a curveball that when he hit it, it was a true 12-6 monster that just you're not going to hit it. I don't care if you're 17, 18, 22. And then he had a changeup in there in the mid-80s, and I thought that was pretty good too. Tom Kochman, their manager, said it was more developed at this time than his curveball, but the fact that we have a 17-year-old that has anything of a changeup in the GCL is kind of amazing. So he was ninth on our list of Red Sox prospects at midseason, and I feel bad that I didn't rank him higher.
Yeah, and that sort of raises the question. He said listed at 6'1", 170.
6'1", 170.
Oh, so he's not 6'1", 70 pounds.
Right.
Okay. But the short right-hander thing, that's what's the natural thing to bring up, is that he's not 6'4". He's not a guy who looks the part necessarily. So that said, who does he compare to in your mind of guys in the big leagues or guys in the minor leagues right now who are towards the top of our list?
I'm not worried about 6'1", 170 right now, because he's 17 and he's going to keep growing. He's not done. I don't know how many 17-year-olds you know who are done growing. So we'll see what he is.
I know lots of 17-year-olds that are done growing.
I guess Carlos Tochi, more or less. And I love Carlos. So
I'm just playing devil's advocate, because I think that's the natural question with a prospect like that.
I'm a short right-hander. You've got short righties from not in this country, in the big leagues. You've got Jordano Ventura. You have Johnny Cueto. You have Edinson Volquez. We go to American, we have Tim Lincecum. We have Tim Hudson. We have Marcus Stroman. You can succeed if you're 6'1", 170. Well, and again, he's going to get bigger. I assume he's going to eat food from now until he's 22, and he'll
Breaking.
Food will be consumed. So we'll see. We'll start worrying about his measurements once he's done being measured.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I think that's an exciting profile.
It's the most exciting prospect I've seen all year.
Interesting. Who would be second on that list, I wonder? And in terms of the pitching prospects you've
that I've seen,
you've seen this year.
I mean, Giolito is probably up there. I think it's probably him, even though I still have concerns about fastball command with him. But I mean, the raw stuff is unquestionable.
So when you say this year, you're talking about from spring
opening
training,
day, to,
spring training
on. Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't seen Severino this year. I'll see him on Wednesday when he's pitching in the major leagues, and it's well documented how much I love Luis Severino, another 6 foot right-hander. So I think I just found out I have a type.
Do you like anyone taller than 6 foot?
As a person who's 5 foot seven, it just gets intimidating. But I mentioned Giolito. I think we'd feel bad if we called him a 6 foot right hander.
Oh yeah, that's
that would mean you cut off his feet
about 5-6 inches. Yeah, you
cut him off at the ankles, and he's 6 foot.
I don't think he'd be as effective without ankles.
Wouldn't be bad though.
Bold statement.
Wouldn't
there.
Be bad though.
But so 6 foot five, 6 foot six dudes. I saw one of those.
I feel like I've heard this name from you before.
I don't know if it's a secret yet, or still, but Jason Groom is the pitcher I'm referring to, left-hander from Barnegat, New Jersey, who has a lot of interesting things, a lot to like about Groom. This is my fourth time seeing Jason Groom. The comps I've heard from scouts on him are absurd, to the point where I wouldn't mention them publicly. But this is a guy who's 6 foot six, wide shoulders, easy, really easy arm action. Looks like he's playing catch, and then 95 at East Coast Pro in particular. His breaking ball is a little bit better than what I saw when he pitched on the Cape about 2 weeks prior. More consistently tight spin, really tight spin when he's burying it down into his glove side, which is obviously something you expect to see. But, you know, this is a guy who, if he puts it all together, is a frontline guy. Feel for the changeup. Really, really good command to his arm side. Could really go down into his arm side, navigate that arm side of the zone really well. I think this might have been the best performance I saw from him throughout the summer. Generally, that's what the sense I get from scouts is that this was his best performance. Struck out, I believe it was 5? It might have been 7. I'd have to go look it up, but just dominant when he was on. And there are issues there. The fastball command is not elite right now, but he's not even 17. He turns 17 in the end of August. So he'll be one of the youngest, if not the youngest, players in our BA 500 when it does come out, which we're quite a ways away from that. But super young, super good right now. Ceiling, I mean, cathedral ceiling.
Empire State Building ceiling?
Ooh, yeah.
Sears Tower.
Sears Tower is taller than the Empire State Building.
That's where I'm going. I'm getting bigger here.
Yeah, I'll go Sears Tower.
About that thing in Dubai. That's really tall.
I think I'm gonna cut it off there.
Okay, so we're not talking what Clayton Kershaw wishes he grow up to be, because that's that ceiling.
That's that ceiling.
Yeah.
what is that? Randy Johnson? Building in Dubai?
You mean Chris Sale? I think John Rauch is that building in Dubai.
Oh, so now we're just talking about tall
pitchers.
Okay.
Yeah, Luke Van Mill.
Yeah, how's he doing? Is he still pitching?
I don't think so.
He's got to be on the
You have a computer
team.
Right there.
You're selling out on the podcast magic and mystique.
Yes, boys and girls, this is accomplished through a computer.
I wonder, where is Luke Van Mill? Luke Van Mill, right?
Where
now.
Is he located?
He last pitched in affiliated ball in 2013. So, but I do feel like he's on the Dutch national team.
As well, he should be.
So, other fellas to talk about position player wise, we can
stay with pitchers. But first, I would like to note with the GCL, I periscoped the second inning of Espinoza's start. And I got 75 viewers at the peak, which was probably quadruple the amount of people in the stadium who weren't coaches. So that's how well attended GCL games are, if you didn't know. You can go there, it's free, you can get a good look at guys who are, you know, unknown, you're going to see some big arms, you'll see some tools, you'll see some pretty bad baseball, you'll see some recent draft picks, and you'll have run-of-the-mill. And generally the players are pretty accessible, so... You know, go to GCL games. They're fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's another element to this. I think I really like the sort of small atmosphere, the romantic atmosphere of a game. When, like, if you're following a player, say an amateur player in the spring, and you show up to, say, Eric Jenkins was the guy this spring who I went to go see out towards Wilmington, North Carolina. Just like small back roads, kind of middle of nowhere. You walk up to a field, there's not a lot of people there, and it's just that, I mean, I don't know, that's just sort
of romantic might be a different word, because I don't know about you, when I think romantic, I don't think 100 degrees, no shade, children playing tag in front of you.
Well, then
whimsical might be the word I would use. Romantic is a little different. That's literally what was happening at the GCL game. There was a father loading his children up on soda and Doritos, and they were running around the crow's nest playing tag. Ideal atmosphere. But anyway, go see GCL games.
Yeah, go see GCL games. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Or AZL games, which are played in big stadiums.
AZL games, yeah. I mean, but if we say that, then we're getting away from our East Coast bias.
Well, maybe you are. I'm from the West Coast, son.
Yeah, but you've been here for a long time.
Yeah, but not as long as I was on the West Coast.
That's an interesting thing. I will actually break away from my East Coast bias this coming week. I'll be out in Long Beach for the Area Code Games. If any of our listeners would like to come say hi, I'll be there from the 4th to the 11th. So.
Or to Michael Lanana.
Or to Mike Lanana. He'll be there as well. Bill Mitchell's going to stop by. He's not going to stop by. He's going to be there.
Mike Lanana is the one with the rugged beard. He looks kind of like the brawny guy if he were younger.
I'll be the most handsome one. But just fact.
Alrighty.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about baseball. People, if you want to really get excited about something on this podcast, it should be the baseball. I'm not going to get into anything more than just baseball. All right. Who was your top position player that you saw in terms of the conversations you had with scouts leading up to it and the actual excitement when you got to the field?
I mean, I wouldn't say I had too many conversations with scouts about this guy, but Willy Adames for the Rays was really, really good. He's got a pretty good range at shortstop. He's got an arm. I tweeted, you'll see an error in his box score on 28th, I think, on a throwing error. You'll have to take into account that he made it from the seat of his pants. And if it's on target, he gets the runner. Might have not been the most wise throw in the world to make, but he showed off the arm strength and the willingness to throw from his butt. He's 19 years old.
The willingness or the, I mean, again, if ultimately it was an error. So
right, if it's on target, he gets him. I think it was an okay decision. The throw was in time. He just didn't get it accurate.
So it's not a hair on fire, high A shortstop that we're talking about here?
No. No, this is a special player. This is a precocious youngster.
I'm just teasing you to get it out of you. I'm not disagreeing at all.
No, this is a nice guy. This is good. This is the most energetic ball player I've ever seen in my life, especially with the media. So to set the scene, we in the clubhouse there at Charlotte, you're not allowed to go into the clubhouse. You have to have someone go get the player. So we talked to the starter, Herman Marquez, who was very good in his own right. And then we sent the guy back in to get Willie. And I'm waiting there, and all of a sudden I hear, "Ee!" And he's literally running out of the clubhouse squealing like a small child. Okay, I've never seen anybody excited to do an interview before, but he was very excited, and I don't know why the interpreter was there. He was almost fluent in English, and he answered every question, what I believe was honestly. You know, we asked him, you know, you were traded this time last year. Were you thinking about it this year? He said, yeah, I was thinking about it this year. It happened once before. It could happen again. This is a business. Wow, it's especially awesome for a 19-year-old to say that. I cried last year. I didn't want that to happen again. You know, we asked him all sorts of questions, which you'll see, which are on the website right now. Oh, and we did ask him, now that David Price is going to be in Lakeland, since he got, you know, do his spring trainings in Lakeland, since he got traded to the Tigers, are you anxious to face David Price? Said, yeah. I want to look for early fastball, and I want to drill it. I love it. Oh, and he does have power. He's got an approach at the plate. He's got an idea. He's got a bat path that I think portends future ability to hit for some average. And he's definitely got power. He drilled a ball to center field that almost went out for a triple. And he drilled another ball that almost went out, and he got a double off of it. Kind of landed at the base of the wall. Michael Johns, the Port Charlotte manager, could not stop raving about him. He's 19 years old, and I think that was the big key to the David Price trade from the Rays to the Tigers last year.
Tigers to the Rays.
Yeah, that way around. Rays to the...
Adama...
Yeah.
We're getting bogged down in semantics. Okay.
And unison. Who did you like at East Coast Pro who was a position player?
Position player, I've been texting with scouts a lot over the past couple of days. Kind of just try to digest the event. It's hard because at this level, there's a lot of pop over polish is the way I like to describe it. You'll see guys who have potential to develop loud tools, and then you'll see guys who are less toolsy but more skilled. My top position player at the event, at just this event, not necessarily the entire class that I've seen thus far, would be Carter Kieboom, shortstop prospect from Marietta, Georgia. I had one scout compare him to this year's first overall pick, Dansby Swanson, which is another Atlanta suburbs prospect who obviously went to college and developed into a first overall pick. But Carter Kieboom moves pretty well at shortstop. People seem to think he's going to stick there. Above average arm strength, really good timing at the plate. Didn't really the contact in game. He was only there for a couple days because he did have to. He's a member of the East Cobb Yankees program, which is a kind of a cool thing they do. They're very team oriented, so you're not going off to this and that event while they're playing games. They made it to the Connie Mack World Series, and so the whole team is there. They pick their team, and you have to be there, which is a commendable approach in a travel ball system that is kind of not always the most friendly, and not friendly is probably not the right word, but not always the most team-oriented environment. It is oftentimes, but so Kieboom didn't really have a great game performance, not bad by any means, but he's better than what, you know, if you only saw him for those six or seven at-bats, he's better than that. Bat speed from the right side. He actually also is a switch pitcher, which...
It seems to be becoming more in vogue.
It certainly is. He didn't do it in-game, and I don't think he has any designs on doing that at the next level. But for his high school, I would imagine he'll probably do that. He has done it in the past. Just a dynamic all-around athlete who has a chance to develop into a really solid all-around player.
We've got switch pitchers, a couple of them. We've got Pat Venditti, the godfather. Well, actually, I guess Greg Harris is the godfather. Pat Venditti is the next in line. We've got Ryan Perez, right? We've got...
Ryan Perez, I believe, at least for now, he's reverted to just being left-handed,
but he can,
and did. Yeah,
and then we got your guy here.
There's Carlos Cortez, another player in this class, a guy who's really kind of interesting, bat first prospect, but throws left-handed in right. When he's in the outfield, he throws left-handed. When he's playing second base, he throws right-handed. Throws right-handed when he's catching, and he's a switch pitcher.
That was my next question. Are we going to see a switch fielder in vogue, where you got a ball hit to the shortstop? And depending on which way it's hit, he can flip his glove to one side or the other real quick and then throw with the opposite arm. That'll be the next frontier.
That'll be the next thing, I guess.
Can you imagine the range factor that guy will have? My goodness. Seriously, that would be amazing if a guy could perfect that.
Yeah, it would be.
If I said this a few years ago about a switch pitcher, you would have dismissed me.
Yeah, I guess that's true, but...
Hit a six-finger glove at shortstop.
But, I mean, the other thing, Aubrey McCarty at Vanderbilt's another one, who I don't know if he threw left-handed this year, but he's got legit potential as a right-hander, who's also a hitter and a switch hitter, a position player as well. But
that's always fascinating to me. It's like Phil Mickelson is a lefty golfer. His nickname is Lefty. And he does everything else right-handed. But he golfs left-handed, which I just think is, I don't remember the backstory there, but I think it's fascinating that he's a world champion, upper crust, elite of the elite golfer with his non-dominant hand. Imagine how good he could be with his right-handed.
That's an interesting one because I think in baseball there's certainly an advantage to training yourself to use the opposite hand. In golf, I would wonder what is the advantage to being left-handed?
I don't think there really is one necessarily. But the only time I can think of being ambidextrous coming up to help you is if you hit a ball into the woods and you're kind of have a tree on one side of you and you can't your swing is obstructed from one side. If you can turn around and swing the other way,
so that's if you're ambidextrous though.
Yeah, I mean, if you can do it, it's a one.
If you're simply left-handed, then the thing it's just going to be.
It's a one-shot basis.
Yeah.
If you're an elite golfer, this shouldn't come up very often. If you're me, at least 12 times around.
Where are we?
We are at Carter Key Boom, and I think we were going to switch to Brent Honeywell,
yeah.
who was very, very good. You know, threw a fastball up to 95 miles an hour, and a decent slider, if I remember correctly. And, of course, there was his magic screwball, which, as it did against Burlington last year, befuddled the Dunedin Blue Jays. And this is a guy who's not just a screwball. He's got, you know, legitimate stuff. And there's a reason he was listed on our top 50 midseason prospects this year.
Was he number one in the Rays system, or was Adames?
I think it was Adames, then Honeywell.
Let's look at it.
Because I have the sheet right here, and 41 was Honeywell, 42 was Snell. Adames was... This is Thrilling Radio.
I have it here. Honeywell was number one. It was Honeywell, Snell, Adames, and there were seven others if you want to go to baseballamerica.com.
Yeah, you do want to go to baseballamerica.com.
But so back to Honeywell, not just a gimmicky screwball guy, legit stuff across the board, and obviously.
Fastball breaker, changeup, scurveball. That's a ball that has scurvy on it. You need some vitamin C when you're done with your fast.
Rub some vitamin C on the ball beforehand.
Yes. Anyway, yeah, he was very good. He's got a chance to be a major league starter in the middle or better of a rotation, I think. Probably the middle.
Mm-hmm.
He was very good. Sean Reed Foley was okay. He's big fastball for a while. It looked like he was going to dominate for a while. This looked like it was going to be about an hour and a half game, mm-hmm. the way they were pitching. But then Honeywell lost the strike zone, or lost the command a little bit, and lose the strike zone. He got too much of it for a little bit. And Richard Urania said, hello, I'm going to hit another home run. Mm-hmm. And then Reed Foley lost command too, and you know got a little emotional about it and got chased. I didn't see anything that really wowed me from Reed Foley. I think he's serviceable. He's better than serviceable. He's good. He's just not.
He has potential,
right?
But it's not quite there yet. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's not something that made me jump out of my seat.
And with that said, he's one of the few Blue Jays pitching prospects that didn't get traded.
Yes, they traded like 12 prospects at this deadline. Pitching prospects, 12 pitching prospects. I don't think they traded a single position player.
And so, I mean, it's an interesting, it's a bold strategy, Cotton.
Yeah, it is.
The system, they went for it, which I applaud. If you're going to go for it, go for it.
Yeah.
Don't, I mean, you know, if you...
Do one or the other. Don't do one or the other. Don't do halfway.
Yeah, and so...
Don't just get Troy Tulowitzki. What is this?
Well, I think they're in a dangerous position, really. I mean, dangerous to the rest of their division. They're a team that had the best offense in baseball, got better offensively. And David Price, he's pretty good.
He's decent at pitching.
Yeah, so they're going to be really fun to watch down the stretch. But to that end, you were down there hunting down minor league games at a time when guys were literally about to be traded.
Yeah. I'm doing a story, I don't know when it's going to appear because I have to write it, at BA.com at some point about kind of the human side of the trade deadline, which it's kind of easy to forget in this age of player to be named later and such and such guy was traded for three minor leaguers, that these are guys with names and feelings and lives and mm-hmm. families who are uprooted at the drop of a hat. I mean, it's kind of hard for me to picture being just an asset in that way, a tradable, movable, fungible asset to a company. BA is not going to trade me to, I don't know, what's we got across the street, Quintiles here.
Or Canon.
I can trade me to the Canon company. I'd be useless at the Canon company. I can barely operate the Biz Hub. Not going to trade me and get anything back for it, or you know, nothing like that. Not going to trade you. Nothing like that's going to happen. But that's going to happen.
I don't know. I'm a professional. It's a business. The people in charge, they do what they think they can to make the organization better.
Yeah, but you're a 10-5 guy. They got to come to you first. work 10 hours a day, 5 days a week.
I don't think that's accurate.
All right, 5 hours a day, 10 days a week.
So you saw prospects that got traded.
Yes,
Alberto Tirado.
Yes, Alberto. We discussed it. It was Alberto Tirado. He for me compares. I don't say compares. He's in the same phylum as Nephi Ogando in the Phillies system. A big arm with big stuff, and, you know, upper 90s gas. I saw him up to 98 with a dirty slider that our intrepid Vince Larasinisomo made into, I probably think, our most viewed GIF of all time on Twitter. So much so that the Phillies first rounder, Cornelius Randolph, retweeted his new teammate throwing the world's filthiest slider at, I don't remember who it was.
Right-handed hitter, and he
flailed at it.
Yeah, I mean, it started looking like it was going to be pretty high, much down the pipe.
Yeah, high and down the middle, and it wound up in the other batter's box.
Yeah, which it'll be interesting if he could harness that.
Yes,
in the strike zone.
Case in point, the first inning, he went 1-2-3 like, you know, hot knife through butter. In the second inning, the butter won. It was walk, walk, walk. He left. Next, I gave him a grand slam while I was walking up the stairs.
Yeah, I mean, and that's... I mean, we're in this line of work. Every player we see can be nitpicked. I mean, it's just the nature of the game.
This isn't a nitpick. This is Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, this is as close to Jekyll and Hyde as you can see.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, my point is this is the minor leagues.
Yeah, they got another guy in the same trade.
This is why he's not in the big leagues.
Right,
and that's why it's not.
He used to be a starter, and now he's a reliever.
It's not a plus pitch right now because, I mean, how could it be a plus pitch if it's not competing in the zone and showing that kind of stuff consistently?
Yeah. And he got another guy in that same deal. I didn't see him. He was in New Hampshire. I'm not going from Florida to New Hampshire in the same trip. Named Jimmy Cordero, who's touched 100 this year. But the same idea. He needs a second pitch. Needs command. They took two lottery tickets for Ben Revere, essentially. And they lost Hyrule Labor, a futures gamer.
Labor of Love?
No, that's the show with Labor Flav from MTV.
That's a deep reference.
Well, I don't know if anyone at Flavor Flav is deep.
You don't think he's an intellectual?
No. In any case, Labor was dealt right before I was going to see Labor versus Luke Weaver in Dunedin. Then Labor was traded the night before. And it rained, so I didn't get to see anybody. It was sunny, sunny, sunny. Then all of a sudden, the skies opened up, and before you knew it, there was a lake in the middle of center field, and there were literally seagulls swimming on it.
So that's not what you want.
That game was over very quickly. But I talked to Luke Weaver, and I talked to LB Dantzler, another guy on the Dunedin Blue Jays team, just about what it's like to... I mean, Rob Kaminsky of the Palm Beach team was with them the night before and found out on the drive to Dunedin that he'd been traded to Cleveland for Brandon Moss. And so he had to break the news of his own trade, essentially. It's kind of weird to just be among your teammates and just sitting on a bus driving to the next place and find out, oh, I have to report to Lynchburg, Virginia.
Drop me off here, guys.
Yeah, I
got to go. I'll Uber back to the hotel.
I got to go north.
Yeah, that's rough. I mean, ultimately it is a business. And I think that many of the guys, as they get up the ladder, begin to realize that. But in those really low levels, I'm not sure if it's completely understood that you could be uprooted. The teammates you've been with since you were in the GCL, the DSL, you know, those you could be separated from. You could have to start over in a new place with new teammates and people you don't know and coaches that don't know you.
Or think about it this way. I was noting it to one guy. It's the point where we've gotten into this cycle where prospects are less in vogue to just keep a candle on. They are. There was a ton of prospects. I think I said like 7 or 8 of our top 50 were dealt at this deadline. Anybody can be dealt at any time, it seems like. Trey Turner, we drafted you from the Padres, and you're going to be dealt before you start your first full season as the player to be named later. Jeff Hoffman, we really like you. We're going to give you seven figures. Boom, you're a Rocky before you even get a chance to establish yourself as a Blue Jay. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just guys who are less in favor in the organization. Anything bolted down can be traded. International slots, top prospects, mid-level prospects, well, lottery
tickets. That's something we brought up, and we did get clarification on. Was Lucius Fox, because Joel Sherman reported that he was brought up in rumors. He was in talks, and he signed his contract a month ago today as we're recording this. So, but he is a